great friend of this program is a great friend of mine and Jess. He is the Reverend Jim Reynolds. He is the boss of the outreach ministries around Australia. And from time to time, we get him on to talk about issues of the day. He actually contacted us today. He's got a bee in his bonnet. He's got a couple of things he wants to say, folks. And regular listeners to this program will know the Reverend Jim. And he's back with us this morning. I think this is the second time this year we've had you on. But if it is the first time, Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year. It is the second time I've been on this year.
Second time.
Yeah, we spoke just before Australia Day.
That's right, we did too. Anyway, Reverend Jim, good morning to you. How you been?
Oh, mate, I've just been plodding along and, you know, fighting the good fight like we normally do.
Fighting the good fight. Well, there's a lot to talk about this morning. We've had a lot to talk about this week concerning juvenile crime, and I know that you're across all this, and I'd be very keen to hear your thoughts on how we deal with troubled youth. Do we lock them up? Do we put GPS tracking devices around their ankles? I don't know. But there's a few things that's on your mind. That's why you contacted us today. What's up?
Well, I've just been following something in the news today. One of the federal ministers, Stuart Robert, is pushing to ban people who are on NDIS from being able to access sex workers.
Yes. Fill us in on all of this. This is sex workers not being able to use the NDIS.
That's correct, yeah. So basically, we do sometimes have people who, you know, they've got some fairly serious disabilities and that kind of stuff. So, you know, dating is exceptionally hard for them and, you know, they have needs. And part of the NDIS, under the social care part of the NDIS, there is an allowance for them to be able to access the services of sex workers.
Okay, and it was this was the Government Services Minister Stuart Robert, and he said that the legislation needs a tighter definition of reasonable and necessary to be able to exclude sex workers from the services. It's a matter of principle. The federal government aims to close a loophole which allows prostitutes to be funded under the National Disability Insurance Scheme. How are they being funded?
Well, basically what's happening now is, you know, within the disability industry, I guess is the best word to say it, we do have sex workers who actually specialise in clients who are disabled. And when we do have a client who is wanting those kind of services, we're able to make sure that it's a safe environment, make sure that the vulnerable person is safe when they're partaking in what activities they do. And there's that little bit of oversight to keep these people protected.
Okay. What now, I've had sex workers ring this program. I think you know this, who tell me that they do. There was one in particular who specialised in helping sexually gratify a young man who was an adult, was able to make adult decisions, but physically was unable to gratify himself sexually. And because of his disability, didn't have a partner, didn't have a sexual partner, didn't have a girlfriend. So his carer, who happened to be his mother, took him to her brothel once a fortnight, sometimes once a week, for a session with the sex worker who she believed she was doing him an enormous favour. And so too did the young man's mother. Now, should the fee that he pays that sex worker for his sexual gratification, and the mother and the sex worker both told us that they believed it was very, very important therapy for him, should that be able to be claimed under the NDIS?
I believe it should be, because we give people with disabilities access to this pot of money through NDIS, and they are told that they can choose what services they require. So if they wanted to have an occupational therapist, or if they wanted to have a U-Butte electric bed. They have the right to choose those things. Sex therapy is something that some people do want to access and do need. And through the system that we have with NDIS, the workers are able to make sure that this is all happening in a safe kind of environment, because there are some people with disabilities who might not be able to, say, verbalise consent. And there's a whole heap of legal issues that can be sorted out from a worker perspective to make sure that this person is safe and they can still get what they need. By taking it out of the NDIS system, we could end up with people who are vulnerable contacting the wrong kind of worker who could possibly take advantage of them, and it puts them in a really bad situation by this law being pushed through, which the minister seems hell-bent on doing.
Okay, the example I gave you not so long ago is maybe an extreme example, but what if you have somebody who says, I need to visit a sex worker once a week, twice a week, to fulfill my sexual urges, otherwise I'm afraid that I may do something illegal. So I need, for my mental health, to be sexually relieved by a sex worker. Should that person also be able to claim that fee on the NDIS?
No, and most case managers would laugh it out. Most of the people who are accessing this kind of thing have some severe disabilities. They could be limited verbal skills. They could be confined to a wheelchair and that kind of stuff. People who can't necessarily fix themselves, if that makes sense. If somebody was just to walk in and say, well, I've got NDIS and I want to do this, majority of case managers will say, no, you've got things like Tinder and all the other apps that are available. So it's not ever been used in the times that I've been involved where it's been used. It's never been used as just I'm horny, you pay for it, there we go.
I'm horny, I need sexual gratification, and I need that sexual gratification for my mental health. You see what I'm saying? There is a loophole, but it's how do you define who needs sexual gratification professionally and who doesn't?
Well, most of the payments that happen with NDIS go through a case manager. So, you
right.
know, they have to put forward a case study,
yeah.
and that's why I'm saying it wouldn't get past that stage. So, you know, there is an ability to sort the shit from the clay, and it's really designed about protecting that person and making sure that someone who is already vulnerable doesn't become more vulnerable by going into this, because, you know, as you and I know, if they went to the wrong kind of sex worker, it could be a very dangerous situation. A lot of the workers who do deal with people with disabilities are really professional about it, and they do their work, and they don't take advantage of the vulnerability of the person.
So if the client visits the sex worker through a caseworker, and the caseworker says, this is a legitimate claim, should be claimed on the NDIS, therefore that payment should be funded by the taxpayer and not just any old random customer that says, I need sexual gratification from a professional sex worker to ease my stress and therefore look after my mental health.
That's pretty much it. Every dollar that's spent goes through NDIS case manager, so they know what's going on. They account for everything that's happening. So there is already checks and balances to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen. And I'm just afraid that those people who are our most vulnerable, who have every right to have relief and that kind of thing, it's going to be taken away from them.
The Reverend Jim Reynolds is with us. 133353 is the telephone number. Should sex workers be covered under the NDIS? I guess, as the Reverend Jim is saying, each case should be looked at individually, yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're not talking about somebody who can make their own decisions or has the ability to go out and meet people. We're talking about people with disabilities like MS, where they can hardly move their bodies and that kind of stuff, who used to be healthy and the diseases has taken away all that ability.
Or somebody who's had a stroke or someone suffering motor neuron disease or...
Exactly. And, you know, let's face it, everyone has a right to have a little bit of fun now and then. And, you know, we have the systems in place to protect people and to make sure that they're valid. And I just think that the current Liberal government is living in the 50s when they say, well, it's against community standards. We need to sort of wake up. It's 2021 now. And these are real issues that people face when they have a disability.
The Reverend Jim Reynolds, the boss of the outreach Christian outreach centres around Australia, is with us. 1-3-3-5-3. We've talked a lot this week about juvenile crime. It's a massive problem, not just in Queensland, but right around Australia. And I know that you deal with troubled youth through your outreach ministries in Victoria. What's the answer, Reverend Jim? The Queensland Police Service is saying tougher sentences. And those juveniles, that is someone who's committed a crime and is under the age of 18, whilst out on bail, GPS tracking devices on their ankles being possibly a solution. Your thoughts?
I'm not a big fan of the GPS trackers. What I've learned from many years of doing this kind of role is when it comes to juveniles, I've not met a bad one yet. What I have met are kids who have no... they have no anchor in life or anything like that. And when I do meet kids like this, and I've done it quite a few times, and it's very effective, and it's similar to what Senator Lambie has floated, you know, going back to the national service kind of thing. I have got a few veterans that I work with quite a bit, and you've spoken to one of the advocates, Mick, a few times. These guys, they are happy to take kids under their wing and teach them skills and do a lot of stuff with these kids to help give them that kind of anchor that they need. I've found it to be effective, and with the kids that I've worked with, it's worked 90% of the time. I think that rather than having the juvenile detention centres, maybe looking at something where it's... There's a UK TV show called Bad Lads Army. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, and there's another one called... Oh, there's another similar show in the United States where kids go off to a hard prison and they get taught some serious lessons.
Yep. With the amount of veterans that are coming back who have their own issues and stuff like that, they still have trades and they still have some really great skills. Why aren't we combining two issues to fix the problem that we're seeing? We've got a lot of veterans who are having trouble finding work. We have a lot of troubled kids at the moment. Why not look at a program where returned servicemen, because most of them have a trade when they're in the military, when they come back, mentoring these kids, looking out for these kids and spending time with these kids and giving them some sort of future. And you can link it in with, say, the Department of Education or TAFEs. So the work that they're doing, it will result in maybe a trade qualification or something like that. We need to think outside the box on this one.
All right. Just on a sad note, yesterday we heard the news that Captain Tom Moore, that wonderful, wonderful man, the British World War II veteran who raised millions of pounds for health service workers on the front line in the battle against COVID-19 in the UK, he died at the age of 100. What an amazing character, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. Age doesn't stop you from helping the community.
And what the last year of his life, the most exciting, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this whole pandemic has changed the world in such a way. We've all been strapped in for a crazy ride.
We have indeed. All right. Reverend Jim Reynolds, always good to talk to you. Is there anything else while you're there?
Well, I was really interested in what you were saying about the Balland taxis.
Oh, you want to talk about that? Yes.
I'm actually...
It's pronounced Balland, is it?
Yep, Balland, yes.
Eureka Taxis Balland. It's a Victorian taxi service. They've defended their decision to exclusively use Australian drivers with English as a first language. Now, a lot of customers wouldn't have a problem with this. A lot of taxi customers, particularly in the smoke where I am, find it very, very frustrating that a lot of taxi drivers can't speak English.
it's the same in Melbourne. You know, most people favour Uber over a taxi. But I do like what they've done, because I think the biggest question that was raised when, you know, this was first floated was, who is actually Australian? And the main thing was, we, especially in Melbourne, we see a lot of ads that will say Chinese-speaking only or Indian-speaking only.
Yes, that's true.
And that has become super, super popular. So, you know, where I'm helping people to get work, close to 50% of the ads that I'm looking at are demanding that these people speak another language.
Absolutely. You know where I am here at Triple M Central. And there are so many restaurants, unfortunately, a lot of them have closed since COVID, but there are so many restaurants with positions vacant signs, and you must be able to speak Chinese. The ad says it. And I get that, because the majority of the clientele where I am is Chinese.
Absolutely. And knowing Balan and knowing the Ballarat area quite well, you know, it's not a matter of they want some white ochre bogan driving the taxi. They want someone who is speaking English like you and I are. And if other employers can turn around and say, well, we want someone to speak Chinese, why can't we specify that you must be able to speak English? I think they've done it as a challenge to what we're seeing in employment at the moment, where so many companies are saying, well, you must speak this other language, otherwise you're precluded. Why can't we have that for English?
Very good point. Reverend Jim, always good to talk to you. You take care. Let's stay in touch.
No worries, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
Can't wait. You take care. I'll put you back to Jess. 133353 is the telephone number. If other businesses can say in their advertising, must speak Chinese, must be able to speak Puerto Rican, must be able to speak whatever, whatever, why can't a taxi service advertise and say, you must have English as a first language to work for our taxi service? Is there anything, does anyone have a problem with that? 133353 is the number. Lots to talk about. This is the Night Shift on Triple M.